Good evening, Graham. Welcome to the Space Show.
Good evening, Andrew.
What's your current understanding, Graham, of the what happened to the Optus B2 launch last December?
Well, we know the satellite is completely destroyed. 48 seconds into the flight, there was a large explosion of the satellite on top of the Long March rocket. The Long March rocket continued and delivered the perigee motor and the debris of the satellite into the correct Long March low Earth orbit. The satellite was blown to pieces. It was a little bit unclear at the time exactly what had happened to it, because the perigee motor was up there in the correct orbit, and the people tracking it with radar gave us an orbit. It was a correct orbit, and we initially thought that the thing just wasn't talking to us. So we tracked it for a number of days, sending all sorts of commands to it to try and make it talk to us, but eventually some people found some bits and pieces on the ground. Then it was quite evident that the satellite had exploded, and the bits and pieces were on the ground. The satellite was complete write-off, and it was only the perigee kick motor that was in the low Earth orbit.
And also, I presume some of the payload fairing would have been found as well.
Yes, the payload fairing was... most of the payload fairing has been found. A good 60 to 70% of the satellite has been found, and the investigations are going on with Hughes Aircraft Company with the satellite, and the Chinese are looking into the fairing debris.
So where is the debris now?
The satellite debris is in Los Angeles at the Hughes Aircraft Company factory, and the satellite fairing is in Beijing.
And what they're presumably doing, what they do with a crashed aircraft, trying to piece it together and work out what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're doing, Andrew. They're, in fact, we have knowledge of the Hughes Aircraft Company investigation at the moment. They have published a preliminary report and then a final report just in recent days. We've had a look at that, and that's exactly what they did. They got... aircraft type investigators in. They got not only their own experts but people from right across the industry, some of their competitors as well, to do a very thorough investigation of the satellite debris and what may have caused the problem.
And is that going to be released publicly?
I very much doubt it, but the conclusions are public, and that is that they're really strapped to find something definite that went wrong from the satellite point of view. They know that there was an explosion and a burning of the fuels, but exactly which caused the fireball 48 seconds into the flight, but exactly what caused the fuels to ignite is unknown. And Hughes have done a very thorough investigation, going through all the possible things that may have happened, and they cannot find a fault in their design or any evidence of failure at all that caused it. So it is a, although it's not a mystery, they know it's that it did explode, and it was the mixing of the fuels that made it explode. They can't find any mechanism or any design flaw that would have caused that.
So that leaves the obvious speculation, perhaps that there was a fault in the Long March payload shroud, perhaps.
Yes, well, the Chinese are yet to present their findings. That they'll be doing that up in Beijing on later on in April, I believe the 26th, 27th, around there. And we've yet to hear their side of the story. But all indications that we know of publicly say that they can find nothing wrong with their rocket and their fairing. But we haven't had presented to us their formal results of their investigation yet. And then the two parties have to get together and find out if any any combination of both satellite and Long March 2E information can shed any more light on it. So they need to get together and combine, and they'll be doing that in Beijing later on. but it's not an obvious fault of what's gone wrong, that's for sure.
Has this doubt over what caused the accident had any difficulty with the insurance claim?
No, not from our point of view. Optus insured. We have delivery on orbit, and we insured. We had an excess, if you like, to pay to Hughes Aircraft Company, which are the providers of the satellite on orbit. Our satellite obviously didn't reach orbit, so we had a very simple claim on our insurance for the excess, which we paid to Hughes Aircraft Company. So that's our insurance out of the way. Hughes Aircraft Company probably has insurance to insure for the satellite and their losses, and we're not privy to their dealings with the insurance companies.
Okay. Meanwhile, you've got three healthy satellites in orbit.
We've got four, actually. We've still got old A1 satellite hanging around, which we're going to do some tests on. But yes, all the satellites we have in orbit are healthy and just working fine.
And you presumably can cope with the expected traffic in the meantime until the replacement satellite is launched.
Yes, right on the failure of B2, we had a contingency plan in place, which we implemented straight away. And that contingency plan involves moving all the traffic off our A3 satellite, which was at 164 degrees east, onto our A2 satellite, which was at 156 degrees. We have done that. That was finished on the 5th of April. So we basically have B1 completely full and A2 completely full. We are now in the process of, and A3 completely empty. We're now in the process of moving A3 over to A2's position. So two satellites are taking the full load, and we'll be cutting over from A2 to A3 at 156 degrees on the 26th of April. That's because A2 is nearly out of fuel. It still has another 6 months or so of fuel left in it. What we'll be doing with that satellite is moving it back to 164, and we will be providing services internally for Optus back up to our terrestrial system, basically, on an inclined orbit basis. So we'll be keeping A2 at 164 for another 5 years, providing backup to our terrestrial system via satellite.
Perhaps you'd like to explain to listeners how you keep a satellite in a particular place in space.
Yeah, certainly. For normal services, we try and keep our satellites within a 0.05 degree angular box, both in longitude and latitude, in space. This means that people, even with fairly large antennas, can have fixed antennas pointing towards a portion of the sky and not have to track the antennas. And to do that, we have to perform manoeuvres on the satellite. The satellites don't stay there by themselves. There's small perturbing forces such as gravity and solar wind and things like that. So we have to do manoeuvres, typically a north-south manoeuvre, which is to correct the latitude. We do one of those every 21 days on the A series and a little bit less than that for the B series. And then we do longitude adjustments, both drift and eccentricity adjustments, to top that up, typically on the same sort of cycle. So we're usually doing about one or two manoeuvres a week on a on the satellites to keep them in their correct orbit.
You mentioned that some of the A-series satellites are becoming obsolete. Why can't you just keep on using them forever and ever?
Well, we can't keep them in that stationary position in the sky. The electronics and the systems on board the satellite are functioning okay. The A-series satellites was designed for 7 years' life. Now, that was a fuel life. The electronics, based on our analysis, is probably good for a lot longer than that. The probability of failure goes up the longer you go. We reckon we can quite comfortably go 15 years or so without too many electronic bits and pieces failing. So it's basically we run out of fuel. We can't keep it stationary in the one spot. The way you can extend the life, though, is to only station keep the satellite in one dimension. We keep the longitude fairly tight, and then we let the inclination build up, which moves the satellite in latitude up and down. It gradually gets bigger, about 1 degree a year, or about 0.8 degree per year, which requires a tracking antenna on the ground to track it. But you can get it, if you do have those tracking antennas, you can provide additional service out of the satellites. In fact, that's what we'll be doing with our A2 satellite. We won't do the inclination manoeuvres, and we will extend the life by 5 years by using tracking antennas on the ground and providing services via that satellite.
And when will the replacement for the B2 be launched?
Okay, the replacement for B2 is B3. It's under construction at the moment at Hughes Aircraft Company, and it's planned to be launched in February 1994. And we hope to have it in service by delivered to us, if you like, by the end of March. It's not clear at this stage whether we're going to bring it into service carrying customers, or whether we're going to put it into a storage orbit to replace A3 when it runs out of fuel in 1997. That's a commercial decision, and we've got another nearly 12 months. A lot can happen in 12 months in the satellite business. So we'll make that decision sometime towards the end of the year, whether we're going to put it in storage orbit or whether we're going to bring it into service.
A storage orbit presumably being one that you don't need much fuel to keep it in position.
Yeah, that's correct. We put it into an orbit with an inclination, the inclination decreases, and by the time we want to use it, it's right in the equatorial orbit where we want it.
Well, Graham, thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show.
Okay, you're welcome, Andrew.